Mr. Gormley, Reel 30. You came back to the Delta area, to Egypt.
Well, we travelled all the way down. Firstly, it took us 3 days because we travelled half speed, more or less. The bodies had taken quite a bit of handling, like, you know. And we got back to Al-Marsa, which is the base depot of the Royal Artillery in Cairo. We got back to Al-Marsa, and the first thing we did was ban us from going out of town, because we got all our kids smartened up, and we had a few days of marching them right through the et cetera, et cetera. They got us all very smartened up and back to square one from where we're going, from where we should be, you know. So we were banned from going into Cairo for 3 days, when we got everything sorted out and set together. And anyway, eventually we got out, we were allowed out, and went down to I saw this bloke walking past, and I looked at him, and I just shouted, "Hey!" And he turned around. I thought, "They're putting sight." I hadn't seen him for years, you know. And he turned around, and there was a bloke who used to box with in Birmingham. When I was boxing for ICI in Birmingham, Ernie Jenkins, he was the ABA champion, middleweight champion. And he came all right. "Oh, bloody hell, Tits Fair, how are you doing?" He's bumping all over the place, which was rattling. That was when Roddy Keane beat me in the final, when I was done with the ABA final. That was when he won the middleweight championship.
And how long were you in this camp?
Well, we were in Al-Marsa for about 3 weeks. Yeah, 3 weeks or so.
And then you must have moved to another division, another unit.
Incident happened there, which I'm going to tell you now. Because when I saw this Ernie Jenkins, and I asked him, he said, "What are you doing, mate?" I said, "Oh," I said, "So he's still boxing?" I said, "Oh, all right." "Well, if I get the chance, I did." Because he knew we all know, and boxes. He says, "I said, what are you doing?" "Oh," he said, "I'm in charge of the army boxing team." And he said, "We've taken them all over the Middle East." He said, "We just go all over there." I said, "Putting boxing shows on for them lads and that, mate, you know." "Oh," I said, "that sounds a kind of skive, mate." He says, "You're still boxing?" I says, "Aye." He says, "Will you be prepared to have a go at 10 days' time? I've got a tournament coming off in 10 days' time." "Well," I said, "how the hell am I going to get down there?" And I said, "Of course, I can't even have any training." "What shall I get training?" I said, "What's your name?" "What's your name?" "And where I am," and I told him later. He says, "You'll hear from us the next morning. Report to the media," says, "go and see the RSM." I went to see the RSM. Right, he said, "The colonel for you," and I thought, "Oh, bloody hell, what the hell am I doing now?" I thought, "You've got a title medal on the mouth, running the bloody nick." Which you automatically think it, because you don't know, right? Even though I'd been talking to him before, because you just wipe it up your mind, you just thought, "Oh, well, it's just a bit of fun, like, you know." So anyway, I went in to see the colonel, and he said, "I've got a request here for you to attend the army boxing team." I said, "To Heliopolis." I said, "Oh, yes, sir." "Of course, come straight to the man there." He said, "Do you want to look?" I said, "Very much so, sir." I thought, "Well, better than pretty punching him out here in the pretty depot." So I went down there, there was 1500 weight truck there to take me down with me there. And I went in the street training straight away. Q didn't know who was fighting out like that. And when I got there was another two lads there who I'd been boxing with before the war, Frankie Daglish and Big Jack Ray. Frankie was a good boxer and all that, and he was a lightweight. And Big Jack Ray, Jack Roy, he was a coach for the Nigerian boxing team later on in life. And they were there. Well, that made me there, because two of the lads I already knew, you know. So we got into street 10, and I came and I fought a bloke called Danny Carabello. He was an American Golden Goose champion. And I looked at him, and he's taller than me, and much longer in the reach than that. And I thought, oh, God. I said, bloody hell. And of course, you had it. You did 6 2-minute rounds, different set of, you know. And you did 6 2-minute rounds. So I thought, and I let he got one on us in the first. I thought, God, I didn't want too many of them. So I thought, well, box cleverly around me. And I just used a straight left. Running and wander right in now and again if I ever got the chance, you know. But I just used a straight left for the whole of the sixth round. Bang, bang, bang. I don't even get before anybody with a straight left. Do you understand what I mean? It must have been used all the time, you know. And I could have ended the fight. I had the woman won the contest by putting my weapon.
And was that the only fight you had with this team?
Oh, yes.
You well, went back to the to your...
Well, I was offered. He offered me, like, said, will you stay with the team? I said, oh, no, I've got my own friends.
So you went back to the unit?
Yeah. Yeah.
What happened to you then when you got back to the unit? Did you get a move?
Well, I went back, and of course, the colonel sent me a contract to the NDR, et cetera, et cetera, and the major. And then the next move was up the desert. Straight back up the desert. All the way, not non-stop, like, but right the way up. And we picked the, and we went back to the 4th Indian Day, which is what we've come from originally. And we went back to the 4th Indian Day. And we put an attack in to try and relieve Tobruk. Tobruk was still occupied at the time. By our troops, like, you know, and we were putting this attack in to relieve Tobruk. And we went up, as we went up to the wire, there was a storm broke there, and I'd never seen anything like it in my life, like a lightning storm. The bloody guns were flashing, the bloody lightning. Everything was chucked down, everything was bloody bombed down within minutes. Everything bombed down and everything. And everything was bloody tied up. And then it just lasted about less than a day. And then you had to wait till the bloody sound died down again to get yourself going again, you know. But anyway, it was the most marvellous sight. Because you can see the desert glow, and I saw it as a glow map here. You've never seen anything like it. You thought there was nothing there, just scrub in that. And the next minute, you thought there was trees, little bushes standing up, and everything, all lovely greens, and that, you know. Marvellous. Marvellous. Never ever forgot it. Can't forget it. But anyway, that's beside the point. We went there, and then we went up to City Omar, by the way, battle there. The tanks had gone in ahead of us, and they got trapped in this bloody minefield, and these 88s picked them off like snowdrops.
I think this was Operation Crusader, was it, around about the November, December 41? Or November 41, which was Auk and Lex push towards Tobruk.
We made the push up towards Tobruk. And then we got up there and we went to the city of Omar. As I say, we lost quite a number of tanks there, and because they'd been trapped in this bloody minefield. And they just picked them off at their leisure. And of course, we were stomping them. And anyway, we got past them and went up to Libyan Omar. And the same happened there, but not quite so bad. Like. And then we pushed on further up, get more towards Tobruk, and we met up with the New Zealanders and the Aussies over on the right hand side, like, further away from us. And we met up with the New Zealanders, and we were in between them. And And the then the New Zealand have quite a to do with the enemy. And they come in behind it. And we turn around and start fighting all the way back out again, you know. And we got up there, and then the word came round that he was in behind us. We had to turn around and go back and try and clear them out of the road. So we did, and it was funny because we did to them exactly what they'd done to us. We got them, thanks to the bloody minefield, and we sat and picked them up like they were plants. And then we got back down into back down to Siloam, and the New Zealanders were having a hell of a job. But all the time we were up there, you could hear this noise on the wireless, and this G. Williams, who was a signal, like, you know, kept pushing all the bloody New Zealanders. Bloody hell of a battle, he's coming on down there, City with leg. We didn't know you. I mean, you were out of touch completely early, you know, but I just could just hear the wireless in that point. And must have been a hell of a battle at that time down at City of the Zag and El Adam and that. Because we found out about it later, like, you know, and that was when Jock Campbell got his Victoria Cross.
Were you attached again to a particular brigade or battalion in the division?
Oh, yes.
Do you recall which one it was? It'll come, yeah. But this was your Indian division that you were fighting with.
That was the Indian division that we left.
And what kind of fighting were you involved in yourself, personally, with your troop?
Well, we just all the artillery gunfire. We were in it all the time, you know. I mean,
so as the troops moved, the infantry moved forward, you were with them?
You were with them, and if you come back, sometimes you're left in front. You know, in desert warfare, it's fluid. You could be in front of the infantry, or it could be behind the infantry. It made no sense, you know. It just everything was fluid. You just kept everything fluid. And I know when we got back to Saloon, and we were told we're on the way again. So I thought, man, I'm going now. It was unbelievable, like, you know. He said, I'm pulling out. So we went out. We went all the way back down through the gather and over to Tel Aviv. We got a ship and went to San Augusta. I was on what they call an advance party.
Into Cyprus,
yeah. We went to Tel Aviv, we went across on the Hasty, which was a destroyer.
Was this a night run or a day run?
Day run. And we were boarded about 8 o'clock in the morning, something like that. We were all there, didn't take long. And we got over to Cyprus. And that was the queerest place I'd ever seen, you know, because it was still way back in. I mean, there was a little puffy tree there. And there was a puffy tree because they were doing a bit of wood. And the open carriage was open, well, semi open, like that. And getting in, you should be going. And we've been on the advance part, we just started up by, brought up by rail from Panagusta to Nicosia, where we were met by these lads out of the Northumberland, or the Northumberland batteries, and were taken by wagon up to their camp, where they were camped. Because what had happened was they brought us back and put us back into the 5th Indian Division, because the lady that it must have been a cameraman there. He was juggling all these bloody places. He had very few, you know, and he was juggling them all over the bloody place, doing this, that, and the other. And he had even that soup in grease and that, you see, and of course the top grease and the grease. And they thought this was going to be his next stop, Cyprus. So it decided that we'd put a hard division in because the 50 they hadn't seen any action at all, you see. So they thought they'd put a hard division in, so they were sending the 50 division over to hold the island, you see. So when we got there, it was nice to hear all the lads all talking to me like around. Nearly all jolly lads in there.
So you were taken over from the 50th, were you? Was the 50th?
The 50th.
They were already in there.
The 50th was in Cyprus. They had come there directly from England. You know, they just got the handmaid in the desert at all. That's what I was saying.
So this must have been, what, November?
About in November. About in November.
It must be before the relief of Tobruk. He'd been pulled out before.
Yeah, he'd been pulled out because of that.
It was 50, you went off to Iraq, I think, when you came in, then.
Yeah.
That must have been it.
Yeah, well the 50, me and David, went to Iraq. While we were seconded with the Australian Davs, the rest of the 50 Indian Davs had all gone to Iraq, to Kirkuk, and all along that area, actually. Because, Mossadegh or somebody was playing out with all.
So you were with the 5th Indian Division now in
Cyprus. I'm not with them yet. Because
but you're in the advance party, yes.
I'm on the advance party, and of course, as soon as we got there and we took over, we took all the gun positions over. Not the guns, they took their own guns. We took the gun positions over, everything over, lock, stock, and barrel. There was 100 camps, proper 100 camps, you know, lovely camp.
Where was the location of this camp, do you recall?
Kokedi Timothea. That's about 14 kilometres north of, or west. About 14 kilometres west of Nicosia, which was the capital. You know, so we landed in there, and we landed in the land of milk and honey, and it really was beautiful, wonderful, after the desert. Lovely and green, and everything was beautiful. And we got there, as I say, with the advance party. And because it's been a lot of memories back then. And anyway, they had left us, and we were waiting the rest of them coming in. And this Lucas said to me, can you make a meal for the men coming in? I says, you're fully 120 men. I said, bloody yellow. I'm going to cook for it. Yes, I'll put up something together, sir. It's funny, you couldn't knock anything together, you know, you just didn't worry. So I went down to the quartermaster was there as well, right? So I went down to him and I do the message, right, you know. And but he joined the beef and everything, and that, and he left all these lovely Dutch ovens and everything there. So I put the Dutch oven in there. I get that all stoked up and put some meat in there, put them all covered in there. Put them in there. I made a lovely beef stew. And waiting for the lads all coming in, you know, I got this stew. And every little thing I went in that beef stew. And the lads come up later, they all landed later. Right, I'll come and get your grub, lads. They look at the club, and they come back. We have another place, lad. I said, there's plenty of them out here. I said, I have nice skins, you know, look there. Bags are pretty stuffy, lads. Make the most of it. 2, 3 times. Even if somebody to come up to sleep, she said, I know that I was beefing up, which I did. Funny, you learn to do anything like that. Funny, you don't speak to that. He said, could we have any of that? Could we have a bit of that stew? I said, all right, there's half a dixie there. Let's get another.
What was your role in Cyprus? Purely defensive?
Purely defensive role, as compared. So, anyway, this bloke comes up to me, he's bombed here, like, oh, this is sorry, bloody rubbish. And he comes to me, he says, where's the rest of the rations, Tit? Says, the rest of what rations? Where the rations, you do the rations at the quartermaster this morning? He says, I said, I know. I said, well, I said, you've had it. I've given it. Then he said, that was for a bloody week. I'd use the week fraction. I'd use the week fraction to one penny meal. I laugh about it, don't get a card out of it. I'd use the week fraction to one penny. I said, you better come see you and get some of your nuts.
The positions you'd taken over were obviously well prepared by then. Because the 50D had been in before and done it.
Yeah, but that didn't stop us wanting different positions, if you understand what I mean. We knew what we wanted, you know. So our media and that, you know, our way around, oh no, this is, we don't want this, we don't want that, you know.
So
we had to go renew all these new positions that they wanted. Because they knew what we were going to come to, like, or expected to come to, but it never did come, did it?
Were you expecting a parachute invasion, mainly, were you?
And we were all prepared for it. Mm. And there's no way we would have got down parachute down on there. No way. Everything was just waiting for it. It was all in the that was it.
What was Cyprus like? How did you get on with the Cypriots?
Not very well. Not very well. They were a Greek Cypriot. And I had a lot of trouble with that very Macarius. He was still in charge there, you know. We had we moved around the island quite a lot. We did sea defences from the booster. We went down to Larnaca there. We went over the Trinidad Mountains. You know, we moved around all the time, so nobody knew where we were at any given time. And we all had all these little caches all there with ammo, everything, all single way. Dugging in proper caves and everything, you know.
And you just went round them, in effect.
We just used to go from one to the other, so nobody knew where we were.
So it was
any given time.
It was quite a mobile role that you had in that sense.
I would have defied them to take that island. Definitely defied. No way we would have got them. We never got out there.
And the Cypriots, were they not working for you? Were any working for you?
They worked for you in one way. In fact, I won't remember this because blokes had there, and I'm not saying it out of context or anything like that. But there are a lot of people that were with us. They didn't even know where any potatoes came from. Okay? And we were up in this little village called Kokini Trimathea. And they looked out there and said, well, where do the potatoes go? So I said, I sent them potatoes. Potatoes, are you having them on? I said, no, no way. I said, yeah. I said, I'll show you. And I just went out and I just dug in. And we just took a few off the bottom. I said, yeah, potatoes. And they didn't even know where the bloody potatoes come from. I'm sure they thought they'd bloody go and trade with them.
Who's this? The Cypriots? Your own men.
They couldn't even recognize the potatoes growing on the ground. A lot of them. And I said, we're on cloud heaven here. we just got out every day. Then about 3 days later, you see all the leaves just dropping like that. There was no leaves to grow. Was going mad.
Was there any leisure time for you whilst you're on the island?
Oh, yes. We were based clearly in his cooking he took the fish, but we were never ever there long, if you understand what I mean. Because as one patrol went out and did the round, or one troop went out and did the round, the other one stayed there, you see. And so that you were always on the move somewhere different every day. And so you didn't have a great lot of time for leisure activities, but it didn't stop you going out anywhere, because wherever you were, you just you went down to the nearest stamina, you started filming jars or whatever, and that, you know, it was, oh, it was quite good actually. I really enjoyed it, because as I said, it was a man with milk and honey. There was only one thing we'd find wrong there, because they were buying a lot of this bread up. They were having bread made with what they call raisin bread, and it's full of bloody raisins. They filled it more with raisins because they were buying the raisins, and were all their bloody, not seedless ones, were full of bloody stones. So every time you got it, you used to pick all the bloody raisins out because you couldn't eat them, any things, and you finished up with a lace curtain, didn't you? You finished up with a lace curtain, you had to eat all this bloody raisin bread. Oh, God, it's bloody awful. And, we went out to Farmer Buster on the sea defences there for quite a number of weeks, and we had a bit of a room with a shipy of staff. We made our mind up and said, right, the day we move, we've got a sort them out. In a place called the Bella Vista. We'll have them. So the night before we moved, because we're only down there, we're only about to be there, like you know. The night before we moved, it's the way we went up. We let the night go to us when you know, when I got to about 11 o'clock, we said, well, that's it, like that. There's no good time. We were set to, we wrecked up the fucking joint. Because we had that much pretty hassle off them. And we were nearly moving the next day. We weren't moving about, we were just moving the way back to where we'd come from.
What kind of hassle have they been giving you?
It's just indescribable, you know. You just knew you weren't bloody welcome. You just knew that you weren't bloody welcome there. They didn't want you there. They'd rather have the bloody jelly there than that, as far as they were concerned. So, I mean, we didn't set out to upset them or anything like that, you know, but they shot two or three of that. Killed 2 or 3 years alive. Just caught them, just split the bloody throat. And that, and...
How did they have the same trouble with the Indian troops in the division that were there?
No.
They were all right with those. They didn't.
I don't remember the day. You know, we weren't bothered about that. And as I say, like the slipping pretty slick. And that happened. A lot of bloody hassle in the HLI. Of course, the HLI was there as well. Like in the end, the incident that occurred there, I'd probably have that and been put in the pit. We come to me at 4 o'clock in the morning, woke me up and said, right, go on, we have spent a job on here to put that bloody stuff out there today. He said, get the breakfast ready for the men, he's in the guard room. And he's probably had that and been put in the bloody guard room. And they woke me up at 4 o'clock in the morning to tell us to get the bloody food ready for the men coming in for bloody breakfast.